Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and I'm reading currently three books by Billy Edward Albert Meyer. One is called Macht der Gedanken, The Might of Thoughts. The other is called The Psyche. And the third book is called The Way to Live, The Art zu Leben. And, of course, I still have The Goblet of Truth, which I go through and look at now and then. Let me read from page 298 of The Might of Thoughts. It says, "The terrestrial world, as well as all other planets, all suns, and the whole universe, has been created by the creation, by the universal might, by the universal consciousness, and in fact, extremely generously and in such a way that the human being can, at his or her own discretion, build up for himself an innate will, if only she enables him or herself to do that. Creation, the universal consciousness, which has no similarity at all to a god, rather which exists of the purest spiritual energy, demands nothing of the human being. Rather, it gives him/her by means of the part piece of creation spirit, which works in the human being as the innermost enlivening form, impulses of various kinds, which the human being can follow and realize or not, at his or her own choosing, according to his or her own self-created will." So, we all have a spirit form, a spirit. And that spirit is a tiny part piece of this universal consciousness. Now, the universal consciousness is a neutral, positive being. It's neither good nor evil. It's not anthropomorphic. It doesn't become angry. It doesn't become jealous. It isn't vengeful. Our religions have painted this human-like God that we read about in the Old Testament. For example, Jehovah, they even give it a name. And it really, truly, there was a Jehovah. His name didn't begin with a J, most likely. It was Yahovah. And he was one of the lineage of the Giza intelligences. And one of the things he did was destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And Meyer Information explains that part of what was used there was actually an atomic weapon. So the whole idea of God is something that which goes back to ancient times, because there were extraterrestrials on the earth in ancient times, and some of them were not exactly the most benevolent beings on the earth. So now into our religions, we have the idea of this vengeful God, a God who casts people into a lake of fire. Another example would be Numbers chapter 31, where the Israelites are commanded to go in and wipe out, I believe, the Midianites, and to kill all the women and the children and the men, of course, but they could take the virgins for themselves. And this is the same kind of philosophy that we have today in Islam, where there are certain passages in either the Hadiths or the Quran which say it's okay to have sex with your female slaves. So our religions on the earth have strayed very far from an ancient universal teaching that was brought to the earth in the ancient past. And there's been a spirit form that's been incarnating on the earth for roughly the past 10,000 years or so. And it's been the people today that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And this spirit form taught an ancient universal teaching that explained what the universal consciousness was, what the creation was, that talked about the human spirit, which explained reincarnation, which also told us how we can live according to certain creational natural laws, which explain to us how to control our thinking so that we can take command of the circumstances of our life. And this ancient teaching taught us how to be responsible. And one of the most important things to remember is that you need to have independent thinking, because without independent thinking, you cannot evolve your consciousness at all. You can't grow in wisdom and knowledge at all. And that's one of the big problems today with our media, with the news, with the newspapers. All of these things are designed not to help you think, but to do your thinking for you. And we have to relearn again independent thinking, because that's the key to the whole purpose for us being alive. You see, at 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, a spirit form, a human spirit, is pulled into the fetus. And this spirit form is no bigger than the head of a pen, and it radiates an energy throughout the body in a lattice structure, and it causes the heart to start beating, and it brings in with it the consciousness, the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, the unconscious mind, the personality, and the wisdom of the predecessor personalities. Now, you have a spiritual consciousness and you have a material consciousness. The Gemut controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness gets impulses, which are urges, which are direction, which are signals from the universal consciousness. So, that's, if you can learn, if you can pay attention to your inner nature, your human spirit can kind of guide you along by these fine impulses that are coming from the universal consciousness. So we have to learn to pay attention to our inner nature, because from the inner nature, we get direction. The inner nature tells you what is true. Your innermost thoughts, your innermost feelings, and your innermost contemplations tell you what's true. In fact, your spirit can even tell you when your thinking is not correct, if you've learned to pay attention to it. The spirit form, the Geist form in the German, never dies. It never sleeps. It records everything that you do, all your thoughts and your impulses, and it will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong, if you've learned to pay attention to it. Now, the feelings that you have, they come slowly, and they grow from thoughts. Emotions are different than feelings. Emotions rage upward quickly. You should always seek to control your emotions. Do not control your feelings. Let your feelings evolve naturally. And let me read something here from the book called The Psyche. Thus, for the development and the formation of feelings, not only one single block of psychic or physical, spiritual, or material consciousness, space, nature is accountable and responsible, but rather several. Since the physical body, as mentioned repeatedly already, also plays an important role in regard to the feelings and their origination and form. So, not only are your thoughts influencing your feelings, but so is your physical body. And it should be self-evident to know that the change of the pulse and the breathing frequency, as well as the volume and the condition of the single organs and groups of organs, and the entire range of motor functions body play very important roles in your feelings. Feelings are perpetuating energies and impulsations that color the personal living experience of the human being. They can occur as temporary and more body-related feeling conditions. So you can have tensions, you can have ease or unease, you can feel weak, you can have anxiety, you can have insecurity, you can have cheerfulness, happiness. All these are feelings. And the feelings follow thoughts, but they can also be influenced by the condition of your body. So these are all important ideas, because one of the things we want to do is learn to control our thoughts, to steer our thoughts. Because thoughts which are neutral positive are very powerful. We have a horrendous power here in our thoughts, and you are in control of the circumstances of your life. Good thinking leads to good feelings, leads to good habits, which lead to good circumstances in your life. You are not subject to random circumstances in your life. You are in control of the circumstances in your life. In order to do that, you have to first get in control of your thoughts. If you're in control of your thoughts, you're a step away from being in control of your feelings. And you can learn to steer the thoughts, and the feelings will follow. And when you start to do this, your whole life is starting to be guided in control. And your life will have a sense of balance back to it. And this is what we're searching for and focusing on in the spiritual teachings. And let me read something from another one of Billy's books. This is called The Way to Live, Die Art zu Leben. It says here, therefore, never neglect yourself and esteem your own friendship to yourself. Be caring, open, and honest towards your inner friend, to yourself, and to your own capital I. Constantly concern yourself with never turning your back on yourself, and thus neither on your inner friend, who you certainly always need. Therefore, you must not oppress yourself through self-chastisement or self-abuse, or through self-disregard or bitterness, or through feelings of inferiority. And one of the big problems we run into in life is when we're faced with a difficult situation, we can tend to feel overwhelmed by that. And we start to brood. We think about it, we overthink it, and sometimes we just repeat the thought over and over again. And a lot of times these thoughts are not good, but they're negative thoughts. And we need to learn to break that pattern. Because if you continue to rotate these negative thoughts, it will deplete all your energies. You shouldn't carry these inner conflicts. In fact, your own mental disharmony causes your suffering to increase. And the goal here is to reduce your suffering, to be neutral positive, and to align your thoughts in a balanced way so you have good feelings and good habits and good circumstances in your life. But if you continue down the wrong path of wrong thinking, you'll have a lack of initiative in your life. And the lack of initiative leads to a lack of creativity. So, it's very important to learn how to steer your thoughts and to control your thoughts and not let your thoughts control you. And let me give you an example. The addict allows his thoughts to control him because he's addicted to something. And these addictive thoughts, they keep coming back, and sometimes it's the subconscious, the unconscious thoughts that keep rotating these thoughts that we don't even want, that we don't want at all. Let me read this here. In fact, the fact that prosperity and abundance are first and foremost of an inner nature and are expressed in joy, love, peace, freedom, harmony, and then only secondly as material wealth. So we must focus on the abundance in our inner nature. If the human being consciously steers his or her life according to his innermost creational nature, he or she also loves and respects its results, which are expressed through the inner self and through the actual personality. So the universal consciousness has created in you a spirit, a tiny spirit. And from that spirit, the universal consciousness sends impulses to that spirit. And that spirit form sends impulses on to our material consciousness. Remember, we have a spiritual consciousness and a physical consciousness. Your material physical consciousness is associated with the current physical lifetime that you're living. When you die, your spirit form leaves your body and it takes the material consciousness with it. Now, the physical body dies and it just degenerates. It goes back into its basic components. Now, the spirit form and the material consciousness go into the spirit realm, which is adjacent to our physical dimension. And what happens in between lives is that the spirit is processing the experiences from the previous life. And usually it takes about a lifetime and a half in the spirit realm to process through all of the experiences of your previous life. And this activity occurs in an area called the overall consciousness block. And in the overall consciousness block, the spirit form is working with the overall consciousness block to take those experiences and turn them into a kind of neutral creational energy, which strengthen the spirit form. So each lifetime, where there is true evolution, the spirit form is strengthened and becomes more powerful. Things like peace, joy, love, responsibility, things like that, that have evolutive value, are converted into this neutral creational energy and stored in the spirit form, and they also go in the subconscious. So your next life, you can be kind of influenced by the wisdom of your predecessor personalities. So what happens is, when the spirit finishes its work in the spirit realm, it's pulled back into the body of a child at 21 days. And the cycle then repeats. The energy from the spirit form goes throughout the body. The heart starts to beat. The consciousness comes into the brain of the child. The spirit goes into an area called the superior colliculus in the midbrain, which controls gaze and controls sight. And the whole life begins again, and you've got to grow back up. You grow back up. The material consciousness is the material consciousness of a child. But deep in the subconscious is the wisdom of the predecessor personality. So let me read something from an article up on the Future of Mankind site. This was written by Marianne Ulinger, who works directly with Billy. It says, just imagine our horrendous knowledge, which for the most part lies unused in the memory of our subconscious and in the planetary storage banks under our frequency. So there is something called the planetary storage banks. And we have our own frequency there. And let me continue reading here. I am immensely happy that my predecessor personalities left me a few evolutive impulses. Now there are impulses in the storage banks under our frequency that can help us with our evolution the next time, the next material lifetime. So we can get a step up. And that's why some people seem to evolve so quickly. Well, they, one way or another, have keyed into these impulses in the storage banks under their frequency. Marianne goes on, but if I do not progress in my conscious thinking to the point of being able to use the data, then none of the knowledge will be accessible to me, or it will only trickle through in drops. It namely is not, as you may assume, that we are constantly bombarded with inspirations from our subconscious. In fact, something only internally or externally, a certain sensitivity for the non-physical, fine structured substance is required. So we gain an ability to have a sensitivity to these fine fluidal powers, to these impulses, which are kind of urging us and directing us. However, if you continuously brood, and if your thinking is not balanced, you won't be sensitive, and you'll miss these fine impulses. And this kind of brooding creates a kind of a state of idleness, and your thoughts tend to rotate. And we can even get degenerative thoughts and feelings from our predecessor personality. Some of the unhealthy thoughts and feelings go into the universal, these planetary storage banks as well. So there's two sides, a positive and a negative one, to these storage banks. So anyway, that's a quick overview of the spirit form and the universal consciousness. And let's just take a little relaxation here, listen to a few sounds of nature, and I'll be right back for part two. Welcome back, folks. I hope you're enjoying these shows. I know the people that listen on the archives are certainly seem to be enjoying these programs, and I know that it's beneficial for me bringing them to you. I want to read something from the Goblet of Truth, that talks about this fine spiritual perceiving. We're talking about impulses that come from creation. This is Goblet of Truth, chapter 25. Therefore, you humankind of earth, you must strive and evolve as individuals in yourselves from out of your own consciousness as well as out of the thoughts and feelings. In order to come to the truth and to the fine spiritual perceiving of the love of creation, so there can be true love and harmony as well as freedom and peace in you, in order to then also carry forth these high values so that you, your humankind of earth, may profit from them, and so that everything may turn to the best well-being amongst you all. Now, Edward Albert Meyer is a man in his late 70s. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmid Ruti. His extraterrestrial contacts began at about an age of 5 years old. And his first contact person was an elderly human being called Svath. Now, Svath was from a race of people that today call themselves the Plearen. However, for hundreds of years, and maybe even longer, they were known as the Pleiadians. Although they're not from our Pleiades, they're from some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different dimension. And their world is called Era. They have no roads on Era. They really don't have giant cities. They don't have any air pollution. They have a small population of about 500 million. They have giant forests, and they live in a tremendous harmony with everything, all living creatures, animals, plants, and they haven't had war for 50,000 years. And they come here only for one purpose. They come here to bring a teaching. They don't want anything else from us. They have a philosophy that says that live and help live. And they think that it's their duty to help less evolved civilizations. And one thing of particular interest to them is a spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer, because it's very, very ancient. They call it Nokodemjan, Nokodemian. And they've traced its incarnations on Earth for the past 13,000 years or so. It's been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And it's always taught this ancient universal teaching. And that teaching has been distorted. Now, in the last age of the prophet, this is the seventh incarnation of the Nokodemjan spirit form, these teachings are being stored in written form, primarily in German, because German is a more expressive language. It's much more suited for communicating these ideas, although the books are being translated into English as best as they can be. Unfortunately, there is a code, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, a code in the German, which also communicates to our subconsciousness. So as you read this in the German, it will unlock certain things in your subconsciousness. So there will be a kind of evolution that goes on subconsciously. Now, the Plearen left the Earth in 1995. They revealed their true identity at that time. Now, between 1975 and 1986, there were extraterrestrial bases in Switzerland, in North America, and in Asia. And there were about 2,862 extraterrestrial humans from the Lyra Vega systems, from, I believe, nearby star systems, from the Tao universe. But they left at that time. They wouldn't tell us why, but they did leave. Up until that point, we had human beings that had been here for hundreds of thousands of years. About 180,000 years, a group called the Hyperboreans had a base here in Mount Shasta. And the base was actually a small city. And their golden-colored spherical spacecraft could be seen coming out either Mount Shasta or Mount Mammoth. And they were beautiful ships. Every once in a while, human beings nearby would come in contact with these extraterrestrial humans who were very blonde, and sometimes they would be hit with these beam weapons that wouldn't cause any permanent damage, but would stun people. The Hyperboreans really kept to themselves. And you have to understand that the place called Hyperborea was a place on the ancient Earth hundreds of thousands of years ago. It was in the far north. And our configuration of our land masses was very different then. In other words, Florida was in the far north, but somehow, through some mechanism of climate, Hyperborea, which was then the North Pole, which then was also Florida in that area, was very warm, and they had perfect eternal summers. The temperature never went below 70 degrees. And they had oranges and apples and all sorts of fruit trees. It was a paradise on earth. It was the most ideal place to live. Well, a man came to the earth named Eris the Barbarian. And Eris brought a group of 200 leaders and sub-leaders and thousands of other people, and they eventually started the Great War between Atlantis and Lemuria, which ended in a tremendous pole shift. So Florida shifted all the way down to where it is now. So this area called Hyperborea now goes to its position now, which is Florida, still in good weather. Now the people, the Hyperboreans at that point, must have moved out of the area of Florida and went into the Mount Shasta area, and they kind of went into hiding then. That I don't know the whole story there. That's a little bit of my own speculation on what happened. Now there's also another group of extraterrestrial humans called the Hasters, who had a base in the seafloor of the North Atlantic for a while. There are 7.5 million human civilizations in our Milky Way galaxy. About 2.6 million are advanced. Now, I don't know that you would really call us humans here on Earth advanced, because there are 7 evolutionary steps that human beings go through. The first is primitive. The second is rational life. The third is intelligent life. The fourth is what they call real life. The fifth is called life and creational wisdom. The sixth is we start to lose the need for a physical body at the sixth stage of evolution. That's half spirit, half physical. And then we move into a completely physical form now, a completely spiritual form. So those are the 7 evolutionary steps. We Earth humans are down here at stage 2, rational life. So we've graduated from primitive life, but have yet to move to intelligent life. So how do we move into intelligent life? Well, we have to learn the spiritual teachings to move into intelligent life. It's a natural evolution which occurs. Your spirit form is designed to evolve through these 7 steps, and then eventually merge back with the universal consciousness, which is, again, not God. God is an ancient concept which really referred to human beings in the past who had higher powers because they were at higher evolutionary levels, and most of the gods of the ancient past were not very balanced in their evolution. So you get people like Eris the Barbarian, who were very advanced technically, but not so much spiritually. And that leaves for that imbalance. So what we're trying to shoot for in all sorts of evolution is a balance and consistency. The creational universal consciousness is a natural product of its own evolution, just like the human being and all other living creatures in the entire universe. And everything exists because of these creational natural laws. And its natural evolutive energy of this universal consciousness is so much higher than ours, it would be impossible for the universal consciousness to set itself into direct communicative contact with the human being. Now, the gods of the past did come down and did have direct contact with human beings. And we got this anthropomorphic notion of a creator that's very much like a man because of that. And that was part of the confusion that exists because of our religion. Now, another great confusion that we have is in regard to love. Because love is not romantic. Love has nothing to do with some of the notions of romance that we have. Love is understanding your connectedness to all things. Love is effective, but it's not affective. Affective love is romantic. It can switch quickly to rage. It's unstable. Effective love understands that we're connected to all things and that there is a wisdom condition kind of love. This is the love that the Meyer information talks about. In fact, it says the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So this universal consciousness expresses its love silently through its creations, through their incredible beauty. In fact, nature radiates love. So we have to take the time to be sensitive enough to feel those impulses. And those impulses will also come from your spirit form as the universal consciousness impulses your spirit form. See, the love of creation is everywhere because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. The individual should therefore be aware that he exists only through the love of creation and that he carries this love within himself. The infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life that love lies hidden. And its laws are so wonderfully arranged that people everywhere come up against the radiating love of creation. Although I don't think most people can sense that love anymore. Most people cannot find it or feel that love anymore because we have a kind of callousness about us here on the earth. Each smallest plant and each tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And love is the highest principle in all creation, and everything follows that principle in absolute logic. Only mankind doesn't have to follow the absolute logic because we have a free will. But the infinite love of creation again connects all life, because in all life that love lies hidden. So humans need to stop turning away from true love, which is what we're doing. And we're destroying creation around us, which is the planet that we live on. The universe that we live in is the material manifestation of the wisdom of creation. Wisdom is a kind of knowledge that produces energy. And we produce the energy associated with wisdom. Love and wisdom go together because the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. So when you have wisdom, you will radiate a kind of energy. And love and wisdom belong together. You see, these are the two balancing forces together. And when we produce the love and wisdom associated with evolution, we also help the whole creation to evolve. So the purpose of human life is to acquire wisdom. And this wisdom comes through reverence and learning reverence, the reverence towards all things. Because unfortunately, we have an emotion-based false form of love, which is subject to enormous fluctuations in intensity, and thus can suffer changes and can even transform into rage and to hatred. So when we talk about love, we're not talking about that kind of love. We're talking about a love which is very consistent and purposeful and is not unstable. In the non-creational human being, the material intellect, with all its given limitation, takes the highest place. And because of that, there is a tremendously slow development of the spirit and the consciousness. So the material intellect, it ignores the deepest subjective intuitions of the human spirit. And we today function as a society on the material intellect. And because of that, we can no longer sense internally what truth is. We need evidence or something of that nature. Well, that's not true. You can tell what the truth is by listening to your innermost contemplations, your innermost thoughts, and your innermost feelings. Do you need someone to tell you when you see a beautiful landscape or when you feel love? Do you need someone to tell you if that's real? Do you need someone to tell you when you hear beautiful music, if it's beautiful or not? I hope not. See, we live in a time when we've lost touch with the inner I, with the inner self. And that's what we need to get back to. In order to be able to rely on one's own self, it must first be cultivated in a neutral, positive, equalized form, or at least to the extent that it complies in a large part with the innermost creational nature. So you need to get back to thinking in a neutral, positive, balanced way. Because without that, you can't even love. And once the inner nature, the self, is cultivated, this state must become conscious, whereby a high regard for one's own self emerges. You know, to be effective in love, you have to have high regard for yourself. And you must have a personal imagination of a higher evolution. You must have a mental image of a higher evolution for yourself. And that mental image must be tended and nurtured. And you must not allow unsatisfaction to ever appear, because it moves one to be inactive. You'll lose your initiative if you allow unsatisfaction. Unsatisfaction additionally creates uncalm. So you need to remain calm. And thereby, you need to be calm and not to be restless. So you need to have peace. So you can't flee from yourself. And you must be able to realistically live with yourself in peace and freedom. And you need to learn to be able to love yourself. And you need to be able to respect yourself in your deeds, in your words, in your thoughts, in your feelings, in your actions. And you need to learn to steer your life according to your innermost creational nature. And that innermost creational nature is the capital I, which is associated with your spirit form. And your spirit form is getting impulses, urges, directives, signals, from the universal consciousness. So pay attention to those. If you don't know what to do in your life next, turn inward. Put yourself in a neutral state and listen for those directive impulses. In order to be great in consciousness, as well as in one's ideas, thoughts, and feelings, and in one's psyche, you must also not be submissive. And this is why the religions of the earth are so damaging, because they teach us submissiveness, and you should not be submissive. You need to be independent in your thinking. You need to be self-responsible and self-reliant. And in order to be great in your inner nature, you must never be submissive. Friendliness, which is exercise in the spreading of love, peace, freedom, and harmony, lead to progress and success. So this is the spiritual teaching. And this is not the God delusion. What is taught by our religions is something called the God delusion. Now there's about, 7.5 billion human beings on the earth right now. And 4/5 of these people profess a belief in one of the 6 world religions. And they believe in a God, whether it's Allah or Shiva or Brahma or Jehovah, or whatever God is, in fact, they follow. And they sacrifice food, they sacrifice money and animals in earlier times, even human beings, to the gods and the goddesses. And they exchange money, but really there is a universal consciousness, but it's not a God. And here's exactly where the God delusion and the God delusion insanity comes in. And now we have this delusion. It's kind of an insanity. And if you notice, the more extreme the religion, the more extreme the belief in this God figure, a lot of times the more violent and more insane the group is. Like Islam. Have you noticed Allah Akbar and cut someone's head off that has a different belief system than you? This is the God delusion insanity in action. It's much like there are certain mental illnesses that function very much like this. Let me read a section to you here. Truly, it is not right to forbid opinion holders and religious believers, respectively believers in God, places in which they live individually in groups. It's not right to, these people have the right of religious reflection. And we should not be fanatical. We should respect these people. Now that does not mean that we have to go along with this kind of thinking. We should be personally responsible for ourselves. There's no one coming back to create a perfect environment. We need to be responsible for the planet that we live on and responsible for our own actions. Because creation demands nothing of the human being. And it requires us, it just requires us to be responsible for ourselves. Now, let me talk a little bit about the structure of creation in the few minutes that we have left. The visible universe is only one of seven belts. The fourth material belt is where the planets, the suns, the stars, they all exist. But there are seven concentric circles that form creation, form this universe. And there was a parallel universe created right along with ours 46 trillion years ago. That universe is called the Tao universe. There are human beings there, just as there are in our universe. And there are different space and time configurations in these universes. There are dimensions older than our space-time configuration. There's a Sirius system that's in a different space-time configuration than our Sirius system. So the structure of creation is very, very, in some ways, complicated. There's a central core, which is the very center of creation. There's an Ur-core belt around that, an Ur-space belt, which is the third belt. There's a fourth state, which is the solid state matter-universe belt. And this is where the matter exists, the planets, the suns, the galaxies, the comets, the dark matter. There's a fifth transformational belt around that, and there's a creation belt, also called the expansion belt. And then finally, the seventh belt is the displacement belt, and it kind of keeps out other universes. There are other universes. There are many, many, many other universes. Our universe is in the first stage of its development. And there are going to be 10 to the 24th levels of evolution higher for our universe. And this takes trillions and trillions of years, this evolution. Our universe right now is 46 trillion years old. It's much, much older than our scientists think. And the universe, the universal consciousness, it doesn't work the same way our human consciousness does. It works in pure spiritual energy. It works spiritual in a spirit energetic way. It's not a human consciousness. It's much more, it's almost automatic. It's almost, in some ways, robotic when compared to ours. It took something like 45 billion years for the first material to be built up. Let me take that back. It took, I'll just say, trillions and trillions of years for the material in our universe to be created. And it took trillions of years on top of that for the first human beings to come into existence. Now, I talked about that spirit form, Nokodemjan or Nokodemian. It was one of the first human beings in the universe. And I believe its age is about 9.6 billion years. That spirit form is currently the spirit enlivening the material existence of Edward Albert Meyer. And it's by far the oldest spirit form in the material realm. There are more ancient human spirits, but they have since gone up to pure spiritual levels or merged back with creation. And there's a lady named Bernadette Brand who's wrote a book about Nokodemjan. But of course, it's in the German. Our Milky Way galaxy has about 587 billion stars, suns, and planets. And there's about 7 million smaller and larger solar systems with planets on which higher life exists. And the universe with all its galaxies is very thinly settled with human forms of life. That's why, you know, our scientists really can't find human life out there yet. In fact, we've had human life on other worlds in our solar system. They don't know that yet. And that's, to a degree, understandable because all of the evidence of, my understanding is all the evidence of human life on Mars was destroyed intentionally by a race from the Sirius system because we had some criminal groups that were residing in old structures on Mars And they were captured, and those structures were destroyed, unfortunately. But there are dimensions shifted in time and space, and there are many different space-time configurations. And some of these, a lot of these human civilizations which can travel through space and time are in these other space-time configurations. There are 2,630,000 highly developed civilizations that are known to the Pleiaren in our Milky Way galaxy. From other galaxies, there are 1,141,000,000 human civilizations. So, I think in our whole universe, there are something like 6 to 7 trillion human civilizations. And our universe, again, is about 46 trillion years old. And it will expand, it will continue to expand until about 155, until it is 155 trillion years old. And then it starts its contraction in its collapse phase. And that's the way the universe, that's its development cycle, expands and then contracts. And then, and this is a little bit disturbing to me, there is no physical life after this next expansion. Everything is spiritual. So, anyway, well, I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. I know we caught into a lot of deep stuff here. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics, and I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.